money. Yeah, now, I used to ask that about 15 years ago, and everybody looked at me like, what's he on about? So, if you don't know, nah money means are you all good? It is a question. It's actually a new term. They were created sort of about, there we go, now I'm thinking myself. We created that term about 20 years ago. It's a contemporary greeting. We call it a contemporary greeting because that's not how we greet each other. That's how the English people greet each other. You like to ask each other how you're feeling. How are you? Even though nobody actually cares. We actually care when we say it in language. So we do want you to respond with a money. Hi, if you're good, if you're cool, you probably shouldn't be here. So for me, I'm honoured that I get the opportunity to come and be involved in this, to welcome people on the country. I do that, one, as an ambassador of other current people, but a representative of my family more specifically. My family come from multiple countries, Garana here on the Adelaide Plains, Narunga from the York Peninsula, Werrinul from Shooki Base in Juna area, Grupo from Victoria, we don't say their name because they're Victorian. The other is, my dad's Italian and Scottish as well, so I acknowledge my dad, I acknowledge all my other Aboriginal heritage as well. My Aboriginal name is Banyapunduanui Pinapunuicha, that's a bit of a tongue twister, everybody just calls me Jack because it's easier. But in saying that, I love to be able to speak in my mother tongue language to introduce us. I'm the first person in my family to be able to speak language fluently and publicly. Now our children are getting much more access to it from birth, and lots of other people in our community are speaking much more language. So I'm honoured that I've got to be involved in this journey of language and cultural vitalisation. We actually don't even realise that we're in a pretty significant place here in Adelaide with Garana culture. We actually lead the world in language and cultural vitalisation. There's a lot of languages and cultures that are very strong languages and cultures and have a big representation wherever you travel around the world. But to come from a place of our language and culture being strictly banned and not being spoken for 120 odd years, there's only been three times in history it's ever happened. Ancient Hebrew, one, Native American language, and Garana is the third time that's happened, and the first Aboriginal group in all of Australia. So I'm honoured that I get that opportunity to be a voice for our community and to share our knowledges and bring other people on the journey as well. But in saying that, you know, when we speak in language, what it does is it acknowledges the country that we stand on. This country, even though our people have been dispersed and moved away from the past and today and forever, will be Garana country. And I'm honoured that we get to bring language back to it. But on behalf of my family, more specifically, and other Garana people, I welcome you to our country as well. Enjoy it.
Thank you. What you've just done is pretty profound, Jack, and I'd like to thank you for welcoming us to your country, to Garana country, and on behalf of all of us here, pay our respects to your ancestors and other Garana ancestors, as well as leaders like yourself, and the leaders that are emerging, that you spend your life in service to, and not just in bringing language back to country, and sharing it with all of us, but in developing young people and shifting our hearts and minds, which is really shifting the consciousness of all of us here, which is what this festival is all about. So here we are today, and I'd like to, first of all, thank you for welcoming us to country with this bouquet of bits from our gardens here on Garana country. And this will lead us into a conversation which we sit alongside 36 other cities around the world as part of the Conscious Cities Festival, which was born, was only a couple of years old, and we were one of the first cities to be involved last year, and this is our second year. And events are going on all of this week where we're starting to explore what does it mean to be a city, not just the built environment, the physical environment, but how we feel, how we make meaning, what is its mood, its mindset, its heart set, and place. So Jack, I'd like, if you're happy, for us to start where we started, which is around being welcome to country. What does that mean from First Nations perspective, but also what does it mean to be welcomed?
Yeah, I guess it's really funny because when you grow up as a kid, we don't even realise that there's like things called protocols. It's just something that you do when we're gathering into a different space and place where we find ourselves transitioning into speaking different languages. You don't learn the rules. You don't get the opportunity to go, okay, when we cross this space, we're into another land. We're going to speak their language. We just find ourselves adapting, and I guess it's part of that sort of human thing. It's a sort of transitioning, language transition, no matter what sort of circumstance we're in. Like, this is like professional Jack speaking. At home, it's not, I don't talk like this. But then when I'm around different family members or different countries, we just adapt into something different. So we're learning that from a young age. We learn genealogy from a young age because it connects us to a place, but it connects us to people at the same time. When we talk about where and how we engage with people, one, it's about understanding our responsibility to each other. So the first way that a lot of people address each other is by kinship, whether it's mum, dad, brother, sister, cousin, auntie. We hear auntie and uncle a lot because, you know, we do have a lot of people that we are recognised as elders that, you know, we call auntie and uncle, and we get others to call auntie and uncle for that respect term. But by doing that, it's a two-way responsibility that we have for each other, but also the responsibility that we have for land. Country is sort of the most significant thing for us, and without country there is no people. And I guess we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But it's people that then continue the spirituality and the belief system that African people have as well, and that can change depending on which country you're standing on. Feel like just going back to my personal journey when I started learning Kaurna, I guess more full on. You know, as a kid, we just speak Aboriginal English, and that, you know, we can say things like "Naka the Jubri Boogerties on the wing is Jinnah," which means like "Look at those ugly shoes on the lady's foot," and that's six languages in one sentence. And you know, it's what we recognise as Aboriginal English, which is a language in itself. But I wanted to learn Kaurna more fluently, so I could just speak one language. But when we're, you know, in that word, would say things like "jubbity," which means like it's no good. But on a different country and different people, we use the term "mudla." So depending on where we're at, is what language you're using. And when we're invited in as a guest to somebody else's land, and they teach us their language, they teach us their rules, it gives us a place of belonging. It gives us an understanding that as a guest, we can still look after this place and we can still call this place home. And that's the duty of Aboriginal people in country. We might, you know, well, there's a lot of these terminology around custodianship and ownership of country where Aboriginal people don't say we don't like that ownership because people come and go. We're all come and go. Whether we're traditional owners or we're guests to a space, we all come and go at one point in time. The ownership is if I lose ownership, then my kids inherit it, where it's not that way in culture because it's a shared responsibility. We share this space. It's not an individual. Where in the society we live in, it's a me society where I own this. It's not a we own this kind of thing. So that's why we use the terminology around custodianship more so, because it's a responsibility that we have. Going back to terminology and everything else, it's back to a responsibility we have as people. But at the same time, when guests come in, you have free arranged to do what you want. Like we say, go to the toilets over here. We do all this housekeeping even when we come to a new building. Because while you're here, this is your space. Otherwise, if it wasn't your space, you'd say, I wouldn't tell you where the toilets are. We want you to feel comfortable. So when you're coming onto the country, we want to explain the rules of what you can do. And we'll teach you language which actually recognises the place that we're standing on. It's more specific. Languages are specific to certain countries. And a lot of people find that difficult, that they've worked with it. Or their mum's, sister's, cousin's friend worked at APY Labs and learned a little bit of language. So then they taught them and then they bring that here. And we're going, and they go, oh my God, look at the language I know. That's not the same language here. So I don't understand you. Well, I do, but I don't want to explain and talk back to you in that language because some of those words can be inappropriate here. I remember when I was in America and I was teaching a whole bunch of people, you know, and helping people, so Native American people learn to just strategies in bringing back endangered languages. So they just started their language revitalization journey. So instead of doing a long way around like we did, I give them some shortcuts and some strategies to think about. And one of the people going, well, you're the only speaker of your language. And I was like, yeah. So you're pretty much the only speaker of your language in the whole world there. I was like, yeah, actually, because you go outside of Adelaide, it's a different language. So technically, yes. Yeah, let's go a little bit south. I'm the only speaker of a language in the whole universe. It just sounds better. Now, like, it sounded pretty silly, but only last year I sent a boomerang up to space. So I'm going, okay, now we're going to have to, like, get out of the Earth and start looking at other things. So, but for us, as a guest and coming into somebody else's land, you know that you're respected, you're looked after. It's their duty as a traditional owner to host you and provide that opportunity for you to feel safe, to welcome you spiritually, because our spirits and our connection that us as individuals have, our spirits connect us to ancient spirits that have come before us, whether they're recent spirits of grandparents, great-grandparents, or going back to the dream time of the very first people. And we inherit, each of us as people, we inherit a scent, an odour, and we get this from our parents. You'll recognise this when you borrow a friend's jumper and you smell what they really smell like, and then you go to the house and you realise everybody has the same smell. They get that from their parents, and then they get it from their parents. So the essence of us, each of us individually as people, we inherit our scent from our parents. And you can keep on going back as far back as you want in genealogy. We can go back 6-7 generations and tell you every person exactly who they married and who their children are, because it's relevant to me and it has to be. And it's important for us as Aboriginal people to know that. One, because we need to know who we're talking to see if we're, one, we need to realise how we're going to address each other, and two, if we're like eligible bachelor and bachelorette, if we can marry. So it was really difficult as a kid trying to meet Aboriginal girls, and you go, I'm pretty sure we're related somewhere along the line. And then you have to ask your mum, how are we related to so-and-so? And she goes, your grandfather, her grandfather, her brother, so don't even think about it. In the end, you know, you've got no intention of, you just met somebody, you have no intention of doing anything, and then you just felt like he was always asking mum's permission. So then we have to learn genealogy ourselves. So, but on my father's side, I can go back as far as my grandfather, and that's it. Because it's sort of irrelevant to him, I have to teach him something about his father that he didn't know. So cultures and beliefs are different. Our sense of belonging is different in the societies. I live both worlds, very strongly connected to my Aboriginal side. I didn't know my dad's side until recent years. But as a traditional owner, it's my duty to educate people, to say where and where and how you can trade on country, things to be mindful of, to engage and teach you, so then you feel like this is your place as well. And I'm really big on two things. You know, as traditional owners, people come into country and it's my duty to look after it, so I'm a custodian to this place. And as a guest, you come here, but you also have a responsibility to care for this place. So you know, I don't really go from like traditional owners to like guests. My like terminology that I like to use, and it's going to take off one day, and you might be able to help that, is like custodians and guestodians. It's all about responsibility and care for the country that we stand on.
Thank you. So as guestodians, it would be really helpful for us to understand the deep time values of this place, which are embodied in the stories you tell and the ways of living and being. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I guess, again, like growing up as a kid, we started getting told all these stories that are, in one way you think of just stories, and until you get older, and then you start to realise that you start getting proved wrong. And I was one of these really sceptical kids, because in culture there's a lot of things like astro-travel and transitioning and what people call like magic, black magic, and these kind of things. And you can't do that stuff. That's what you see in movies. You can't do this stuff in person. And then as you get older, as we go through our own journey of life, they start to show you these things for yourself, and you go, oh, maybe I should pay a bit more attention, and maybe they know what they're talking about. And one of these it just goes back to an old dreaming story. And dreaming stories, there's versions of dreaming stories, and ones that every one of you know, you would only know the kindergarten version. Okay? This is there's a reason, because in adulthood there's stages of life, and until you go through these stages of life, you still only understand the initial period. And so we tell kids stories. Like how the birds got the colours and all this, but they actually got nothing to do with the bird itself. It talks about multiple connections, and this will make a lot of sense shortly. But when humans and people were one, we go back to stories where the people were the animals, and we go back to just before the St. Vincent's Gulf was here, and we learn this story about. This fresh water hole right in the middle. And the emu is very selfish, that he doesn't let any of the other birds hang around this water hole. So our creator ancestor goes to the neck of the earth, of the land itself, and cuts it, starts to let water in from the coast, and eventually floods out this water hole. And that water hole, that flood just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. All the other birds can fly past the water holes. The emu, he's stuck. He's either go one way or the other. And because he runs to the York Peninsula side and then finds another one, which is that Karamolka. We call it Paddymolka. Paddymolka is this emu water hole, so that's his other water hole. And as we learn these stories as a kid, and they start teaching me these meanings that come from it, these morals and values that you should be taking from these stories. But as you get older and you start to look at sciences, because we're like the most studied people on Earth. Like, we tell you something and then it goes to get studied. So we tell you these stories, so they go and study it. So they go and take some submarines out to the middle of the Gulf, and guess what? They find a freshwater spring still bubbling today. And we go, oh, cool. So this is, how long ago has this Gulf been around for? Now we can start looking at it. We go, I don't know how long since the story started, but I know it finished forming about 10,000 years ago. And I remember as a kid, people going, my year three teacher told me, Aboriginal people have been here for 10,000 years. And I went to high school, and Aboriginal people had been around for 40,000 years. And I went to uni, and it was 60,000 years. And then the carbon dating years goes to 84,000 years. That's not my forte anymore, but around about 84,000 on the East Coast, you can get out to 120. Whatever, who cares? Numbers are a long time. And I was fascinated when she said 10,000 years, because I was like, I love like Egypt. Things like that. I'm like, 2,000 years ago, that's a long time. 10,000 years, that's 8,000 years before that. We had no idea that in my backyard and around the kitchen table, I'm learning culture and not even realizing it. And that was sort of the best part of it, I think, is just realising that I, in my current state, in what I'm learning, is connecting me to 60, 70, 8,000 years ago. The language I speak goes all the way back to this time. People go, how cool is it to go and visit your people that come from different lands, and they leave and they go, oh, how cool was it going back to see my mother's country where she grew up? Okay, every space and every place I walk on country, or every time I speak in my mother tongue language, I go, I'm speaking a language that